This is part two of the story of Vingroup, Vietnam's largest conglomerate, whose founder, Pham Nhat Vuong, is dubbed the Elon Musk of Vietnam. The year was likely 2001, when architect Claude Cuvillier set foot on Tre Island, Nha Trang, Vietnam. Nha Trang, known for its serene beauty, is not immediately striking by Vietnamese standards. Accessible only by speedboat, lush with greenery, a typical rural island among the country's over 4,000 isles. Accompanying Claude was Pham Nhat Vuong, the entrepreneur who made his fortune in Ukraine with instant noodles and the founder of Technocom.
The early morning sun casts a golden glow over the island, the waves gently lapping at the shore. Amidst this tranquility, Vuong surveys the surroundings with a discerning eye.
Claude, what are your thoughts on this island?
Vuong inquires, breaking the silence.
The place is pristine, untouched. Look at the clarity of the water.
Claude observes, noting the slight green tint that adds to its allure. As they meander through Tre Island, the only signs of life are a few fishermen and a secluded army base. A hill in the distance offers a picturesque view, seemingly unremarkable, yet captivating to the discerning eye. Then Claude voices a significant concern.
You realize the enormity of our task, right? Transporting building materials and labor by boat to this isolated island?
Oh, not to mention the artwork, furniture, and everything else.
A brief chuckle between them reveals a shared secret, a vision for the island that others have overlooked. Many have visited Tre Island, failing to see its potential. Yet Vuong and Claude envisioned a luxury destination that could redefine the landscape. At the heart of their vision stands a hotel, promising unparalleled seafront views, akin to a pearl cradled by the bay. However, the path to success is fraught with challenges. The endeavor to transform an uninhabited land sprawling the equivalent of 3,000 football fields into a landmark attraction is daunting. This project, VinPearl, would not only become a beacon of innovation and luxury in Vietnam, but it would also establish the foundational pillar of Vietnam's largest conglomerate. From 1UP Media, this is Empires, episode 2 of a 5-part series, Pearl in the Bay.
While the majority of Vingroup's revenue is in property, the hospitality and entertainment sector is actually Vingroup's first foray into Vietnam. Entering as VinPearl, it was a move that gave Vingroup the positive brand image of being luxurious and intentional. Widely regarded as one of Vietnam's 50 most valuable brands, its brand equity will eventually serve the company well as it branched out to various other sectors.
When it comes to numbers, VinPearl is substantial. Pre-COVID, it had booked about 4.9 million guest nights and today has about 15,400 rooms and beach villas scattered around Vietnam. It's no wonder that given its wide distribution and excellent brand equity, that Melia and Marriott welcomed VinPearl into a combined partnership. Today, 19 out of 21 of their hotels and resorts are run and operated by this partnership.
But going back a bit, VinPearl, the cornerstone of Vingroup, would ironically begin its journey at a time when luxury was the last thought on everyone's mind. In 1997, immediately following the Asian financial crisis.
In 1997, the Asian financial crisis resulted in a significant downturn across several Asian economies. Despite this turmoil, Vietnam exhibited remarkable resilience, largely shielded from the crisis's devastating impacts.
The secret behind Vietnam's stability was its predominantly state-owned banking sector, which insulated the economy from the volatility experienced by its neighbors. On top of this, Vietnam boasted a diversified economy with substantial contributions from agriculture, industry, and services. This diversification, coupled with minimal reliance on external capital, enabled Vietnam to maintain economic stability. Remarkably, the Vietnamese dong remained stable, and subsequent trade with the United States exploded Vietnam's private sector.
The results? Vietnam achieved an impressive gross domestic product, or GDP, growth rate of 5.8% in the ensuing years. Capitalizing on this stability, the Vietnamese government recognized an opportune moment to bolster the tourism industry. In 1997, it launched a national tourism reform program aimed at transforming tourism into a pivotal economic engine. The initiative marked a shift from predominantly government-operated tourism services to a model encouraging substantial foreign investment.
To facilitate this transition, the government liberalized visa policies for several countries, simplifying access for international visitors. It also organized tourism festivals in key cities to highlight Vietnam's rich cultural heritage. All around, tourism agencies developed comprehensive tour packages encompassing Vietnam, Laos, and Thailand, designed to attract a greater volume of tourists. And these strategic efforts bore fruit, with a 17.2% increase in international visitors in 1999, escalating to 20% the following year.
This upward trajectory in tourism, facilitated by relaxed governmental policies, should lay the foundation for an imminent boom in the luxury hotel market. But this promising avenue remained largely untapped, as luxury accommodations were sparse, primarily clustered in Ho Chi Minh City and Hanoi. These were frequently state-owned or Grand Colonial-era edifices, such as the Rex Hotel in Saigon and the Metropole Hanoi. The situation presented significant opportunities for new market entrants. With the right strategy and timing, venturing into this sector could yield substantial financial rewards.
Back in Ukraine, word of Vietnam's tourism ambitions found their way to Vietnamese national Pham Nhat Vuong. Vuong had founded Technocom, the largest convenience food and condiment company in Ukraine, producing the popular noodle brand Mivina. Technocom is incredibly successful, hiring some 40,000 people and expanding to over 20 European countries.
But the 33-year-old Vuong could not shake off the feeling that he had to return to Vietnam to contribute in any way he could. Observing the trends, he decided that now would be as good a time as any to experiment with creating the first truly Vietnamese luxury experience. In 2001, Pham Nhat Vuong established his first Vietnamese company, Vinpearl, and embarked on a journey to learn what exactly makes a luxury hotel.
At first, it seemed straightforward. Like Vuong was going to visit as many luxury hotels around the region and pick them apart. Back in the early 2000s, Thailand had become a hotspot, in particular, Phuket Island. According to the records, Vuong brought a screwdriver hidden in his suitcase, and at every hotel he went to, he would use the screwdriver to deconstruct the room fittings and examine how they were put together. It seemed simple enough. However, as the year progressed into its latter half, Vuong encountered an unforeseen challenge, something entirely beyond his control.
Initially, Vuong probably thought that setting up a hotel had many fundamental similarities with setting up a factory, a process he was well acquainted with. Both were heavy on capital and required meticulous calculations for the break-even point. On the surface, a factory's cost calculations could even appear more complex, considering that it wasn't only about the fixed cost of construction, but also the ongoing expenses for raw materials. Failure to understand both of these factors could delay reaching your break-even point for years.
In contrast, for a hotel, the bulk of the costs are fixed, stemming from property leases or mortgages, salaries for permanent staff, and utility bills. But the one thing that makes the luxury hotel industry incredibly hard to manage is the revenue generation. Unlike a factory like Mivina, which produces instant noodles and can depend on long-term contracts for steady income, the revenue streams for luxury hotels are extremely variable. For instance, should a luxury resort be hit by a monsoon, it instantly loses its appeal, becoming simply a beautiful prison to travelers. This fundamental difference can force hoteliers to drive down hotel prices rapidly, as much as one-third, rather than go vacant. It makes selecting the location a crucial choice, a decision that likely contributed to Vuong's considerable anxiety.
The location of a luxury resort is definitely a crucial choice, especially in Vietnam. As a nation with over 4,000 big and small islands, it would be foolish not to build an oceanfront resort, exposing it to the beautiful ocean waves.
But a beach resort is exposed, so it's bound to get hit by inclement weather. It just seems too risky.
It is, if you build in the wrong place. And that's why Vuong considered three broad regions, northern, central, and southern Vietnam. He could have built up north as it was the most diverse, consisting of beaches, bays, and mountains.
Yeah, but the climate up north is unstable, swinging from cold and drizzle in the winter to hot and humid in the summer. And if he went to the central region, he would have faced even harsher conditions, with frequent storms in the latter half of the year, shutting down all tourism activities.
And that's why Vuong ventured down to southern parts of Vietnam, where the sun beams year-round, casting a gentler warmth even during summer months.
That makes a lot of sense. In the milder climate of the south, the heat remains bearable, fostering a conducive environment for tourism operations throughout the year, as opposed to seasonal limitations seen elsewhere.
You got it! And deep diving into the geography of the south, Vuong discovered a hidden gem, Tre Island. Located east of Nha Trang, many overlook Tre and just thought of it as a fishing village. But thanks to its location, the waterways between Tre and Nha Trang remained extremely calm and peaceful.
I get it now. The air in Tre was cooler, and the vegetation felt untouched. But maybe it was too untouched. How in the world was Vuong supposed to build a hotel in the middle of the island?
In 2001, the groundwork for Vinpearl near Tre Island was laid. And like you, many expressed their skepticism. Critics doubted Vuong's vision, viewing his investment as a potential financial sinkhole. At the time, Tre Island was an undisturbed haven, home only to military barracks and sparse villages where the locals' livelihoods revolved around traditional fishing. The notion of transforming such a secluded and underdeveloped island into a premier tourist destination was dismissed by many as ludicrous, especially since the venture was led by someone whose expertise lay in producing instant noodles. But they seemed to forget that Vuong wasn't navigating these waters alone. He had enlisted the expertise of Claude Cuvillier, a seasoned professional known for his role in the Hilton Hanoi Opera Hotel project in 1987. Cuvillier's involvement brought the necessary technical know-how to the ambitious Vinpearl project. As Vingroup and Claude Cuvillier evaluated the island, they recognized that what critics deemed as liabilities, the untouched natural environment, and the traditional fishing community, were actually its most compelling assets.
Wow, they were clearly ahead of their time. Because today, the value of maintaining an island's natural charm is well recognized. And we can see this in destinations like Bali, which epitomizes the ideal of preserving nature to offer a refuge from urban life. But back then, the prevailing wisdom favored urban development, casting doubt on whether Vinpearl could become Claude Cuvillier's masterpiece, or a notable misjudgment.
And that's why the approach they took was crucial. It needed to be detailed and deliberate, much like a careful gardener tending to his plants. they implemented a thoughtful plan. Rather than letting the natural greenery proliferate wildly, they meticulously moved palm trees to a specific palm garden, reshaping the landscape. They also planted mango trees along walkways and established arboretums in which they could cultivate decorative trees. And all of these efforts helped ensure that the island's lushness was preserved in an organized yet effortlessly natural layout.
They did all that just for trees. And they didn't hold back either when it came to the actual structures. The hotel itself was designed to merge with the landscape, resting against the mountainside and allowing a breathtaking view of the sea, akin to a pearl nestled within the bay. And the villas, they were discreetly tucked into the foliage, defining Vinpearl's identity as a serene, environmentally conscious resort.
As the transformation of Trey Island unfolded over the months, it inevitably began to draw not just admiration, but also unwelcome scrutiny. Questions about Vong's identity, the origins of his wealth, and particularly the reasons behind his overseas investments became the subject of widespread speculation. Rumors, some of absurd magnitudes, started to swirl around, with many suspecting Vong of engaging in illicit activities. Some speculations even went as far as to suggest his demise. Reflecting on these challenging times in an interview, Vong recalls,
"I've died at least 4 times in the last year. First story, Moscow killers flew in and shot me to death. Second story, I visited Moscow and was shot to death by the Russian mafia. Third story, I was shot in Ukraine. And the most recent story, I've died because of cancer."
While they may seem humorous, the threat of negative rumors on a luxury hotel can be detrimental, deterring visitors even before it opens.
Now, Vong was acutely aware of the precarious position these rumors placed him in. Reacting too aggressively could inadvertently validate the thug-like image painted by the rumors. And yet, choosing not to address the situation could allow the rumors to gain momentum, possibly jeopardizing the grand opening of the hotel.
Ultimately, Vong opted to concentrate on the development of Vinpearl, trusting that the rumors would subside. In the future, he would explain his belief in a single phrase.
"The dogs bark, but the caravan goes on."
In 2003, after 18 months of anticipation, Vinpearl Nha Trang, Vietnam's first 5-star resort, swung its doors open, offering a hearty welcome to both local and international visitors. With 225 rooms, it set a new record for the largest capacity ever in a Vietnamese resort. But a question lingered. Would it succeed?
As it turns out, the rumors of potential failure were unfounded and didn't deter the influx of guests. Room after room, the vacancies began to fill, debunking any doubt about its success. On the wave of its triumph, the company embarked on ambitious expansions. By 2006, Vinpearl Land was inaugurated, introducing a vast entertainment complex that further enriched the Vinpearl Resort experience, cementing its reputation as a premier destination.
But the journey wasn't without its obstacles. A notable challenge was the transportation from mainland Vietnam to Tre Island, which had previously been accessible only by boat. To facilitate a seamless visitor experience, Vinpearl made a significant investment in the Vinpearl cable car. This innovation connected Tre Island to the mainland via a 3,000-meter cable, making it one of the longest cable car systems in existence at that time. And the introduction of an easier access route to the island enabled Vinpearl to expand its accommodations, adding another 260 rooms to its offerings.
By 2008, Vinpearl had welcomed close to 60,000 visitors, marking a double-digit growth rate for 3 consecutive years and solidifying its status as a pivotal entity in Vietnam's tourism and service sectors. Over the years, Vinpearl would continue to evolve, improving in scale, quality, and prestige. Notably, in 2010, it integrated an in-house seawater filtration system and reduced water expenses by up to 40%.
Through it all, Vinpearl dispelled all earlier skepticism and rumors, while reigniting a renewed sense of possibility in Vuong, convincing him that returning to Vietnam could not only be enjoyable, but also have a significant impact. And yet, Vuong was still not ready to leave his past business behind completely. Instead, he would continue straddling both businesses, flying to and fro, until he received an unexpected request. Nestle was interested in purchasing Technocom. Since its establishment in 1993, Technocom has charted a path of relentless success. The company's flagship brand, Mivina, quickly became a market leader in the instant noodle segment, capturing an impressive share of the market at nearly 90%. This significant milestone facilitated Mivina's expansion into 20 European countries and also allowed the broadening of its product line to encompass canned goods, seasonings, and snacks.
Meanwhile, Nestlé, with operations spanning over 100 countries, has cemented its status in the food and beverage industry. Its vast portfolio, featuring over 2,000 brands, including Purina, Nescafe, and KitKat, serves a global consumer base. Entering Ukraine in 1994, Nestlé swiftly established its footprint, introducing its global brands to the Ukrainian market. For Nestlé, acquiring Technocom represented a strategic move to solidify its presence in eastern Ukraine, complementing its acquisitions in the western part of the country.
Technocom, on the other hand, stood to benefit from Nestlé's extensive European distribution network, potentially expanding Mivina's reach.
It was a match made in heaven.
And yet Vuong rejected the offer squarely.
What? Why did you do that?
You see, Nestlé wasn't the first buyer, and Vuong wasn't ready to end his time with Technocom. Besides funneling money into the Vinpearl project, Technocom was a powerful brand built around a stable operating team. In fact, many buyers themselves offered not to change a single thing about Technocom after acquisition. Vuong chose to concurrently manage both Vinpearl and Technocom, a formidable undertaking given the era's lack of remote work capabilities. This decision required him to endure a 9.5-hour flight weekly to maintain effective oversight over both enterprises. Remarkably, Vuong managed this rigorous schedule successfully, reinforcing his belief in the viability of this dual management approach. It would now require a particularly persuasive rationale to convince him otherwise.
In the early hours of June 1, 2009, a tragedy unfolded high above the mid-Atlantic Ocean. An Airbus A330 on its scheduled flight became a scene of confusion and peril as the pilots encountered misleading airspeed indications. This critical situation led to an inadvertent stall, a situation where the aircraft loses the lift necessary to maintain flight. Despite their efforts, the pilots were unable to regain control. The aircraft descended into the ocean, claiming the lives of all 228 passengers and crew members aboard. It was, and still remains, one of the deadliest aviation disasters of all time. Receiving the news, likely in Kharkov City, Pham Nhat Vuong realized something that he never did before, telling Forbes Vietnam in the future.
I thought, if I flew like that all the time, what if my plane crashes? Will it be difficult for my wife and children after? At that time, there were still too many things to do in Vietnam. Things that I needed to do from start to finish.
It became perfectly clear what he had to do next.
It's 2010 in the bone-chilling cold of Kharkiv City. Winter had come, and the temperature had dropped as low as negative 4 degrees Celsius. But the freezing cold did nothing to stop the news that was spreading like wildfire. Nestlé had made its move, further diversifying its Ukrainian portfolio with the acquisition of Technocom, the producer of instant food products under the beloved brand Mivina. The price wasn't disclosed publicly, although experts predicted it was worth over $100 million.
With Technocom sold off, Famnyat Vong and family packed their bags, booking a 9-hour flight back home. This decision would affect over 100 million Vietnamese. From 1UP Media, this is Empires, episode 2 of a 5-part series, Pearl in the Bay. Next on Empires, we'll witness how Famnyat Vong turns from millionaire to billionaire as he overcomes Vietnam's housing crisis to form the Vingroup. Follow us so you won't miss out on episode 3 of our 5-part series, A Good Land Attracts Birds.
Empires is a 1UP Media original, produced and co-written by Guang Jin and Cascade. Edited by Alex. Audio experience by Ethan Sam. Additional engineering by Ashley from 1UP Media. And narrated by Luis Cruz and Claire Bernal. International research by Sonia, Kuyet, and Jiamin from 1UP Media. A quick word on our reenactments and dramatizations. While we can't know exactly what they say, think, or feel at the moment, it is all based on research. Thank you for listening.